Dipinder's and Zomato's tweet was just phenomenal. Just amazing to see how, you know, even competition in this, you know, new age tech ecosystem actually treats each other.
Is there a play left for entrepreneurs today to come in and say, yeah, I'll do something in India one? What will you really build?
I don't think everything is going to be about convenience. We may probably be the last generation who can afford to have this luxury of helps in our house, right?
The reality of the situation is, quick commerce may consumer level price sensitivity is still low.
So the green one is Meesho. So it's almost neck to neck with respect to Amazon now. But surprisingly, Amazon has dropped.
Getting to maybe a 600-700 crore top line will not require as much offline dependence as we had thought before. Because a customer in Bulandshahr or a customer in Latur or a customer in Vizag will now be serviced by at least one of Zepto, Instamart or Blinkit.
Syllabus ke andar wala question puch sakte ho, syllabus ke bahar wala question puch sakte ho.
Hello everyone, welcome to the pilot episode of Asymmetric. Asymmetric is your destination for weekly news. Every Monday night at 9 o'clock, you will see us going on about the events that matter to us from the previous week. It could be in the world of startups, business, politics. My name is Shantanu Deshpande. I'm the founder and CEO of Bombay Shaving Company. Also host another podcast called The Barbershop, where a lot of the faces you see in front of you have come on it multiple times as well. And super happy to be here. With me, I have my dear friend, brother, co-host, Revant Bhate, who is the founder at Mosaic Wellness, runs multiple brands. Before that was an investor, and before that was an operator building out Rebel Foods. We have Darshit, who is a career VC, GP at Sparrow Capital, has spent time before that at Alpine, and Revant says that Darshit has very orthogonal views to even very simple topics. So this is the first time I'm meeting Darshit, so I'm super, super curious to hear his views on all the things that we will discuss today. And of course, my brother Chirag Taneja, founder at GoQuick, just one of the most deeply insightful human beings on all things love, life and business. Also spent a couple of years at Bombay Shaving Company, heading out our online business, and is, you know, someone I deeply respect for his insights. So welcome to Asymmetric, and Revant, over to you, boss.
Thanks for the great intro. Yeah. I don't think we should start with anything else, but what was the most profound news over the last week, which was the Swiggy IPO that was long awaited. I think one of the seminal moments in our startup ecosystem to see a $1 billion plus IPO at a Decacon plus valuation go through successfully, list successfully on exchanges, and just create so much impact around.
For me, I think before I hand it over to Darshit or Chirag, the Dipinder's and Zomato's tweet was just phenomenal. Zomato said, "You and I in this beautiful world, you know, a gentleman in a red Zomato t-shirt, a gentleman in an orange t-shirt, holding hands in front of the stock exchange building." And Dipinder said, "Congratulations, couldn't have asked for a better company to serve India with." So just amazing to see how, you know, even competition in this, you know, new age tech ecosystem actually treats each other, despite, I think, just competing so very, very hard, the way they kind of fight for customers and restaurants and the, you know, the share of the market. But amazing to see. But Darshit, Chirag, over to you guys.
Remember when I joined venture back in 2014, the biggest question in everybody's head was, when we are building a startup, what are we building startup towards, right? What's the exit path, right? I think that was a very big question mark even until 2 years back. Like, are we building to list in US, list in Singapore? And with that premise, a lot of companies used to say, I'm going to be headquartered in Singapore so that I have an option to list in US, right? And I think in my head, that answer is clear in everybody's head now, that every startup founder, the dream is to build towards listing on India's stock exchange, right? I think to me, that's a very big mindset shift that has happened in last couple of years, is if you ask me. And I feel there are a lot of questions. Is India market ready for tech IPOs? Do we have enough depth in the market? Like, imagine Swiggy was almost $1.3 billion IPO, and there was enough, more than enough subscription for an IPO of that size. So I think those questions are being answered, right? Whether India's market has enough capital depth or not, right? I think now it's up to all of us to build those high quality companies which can go and list in India's public market. I don't think it's now no longer a question of whether India's startup companies can basically list in India or not, right? It's up to the quality of businesses we can build, and really left to all of us, right? There is enough and more capital available. In fact, if I think about it now, probably raising $1 billion in public market is probably much easier than raising $1 billion in private market in my mind, right? And hence, companies which are going to need capital may actually start thinking that it's better to go public rather than, you know, being private too long, right? Just looking at the depth of capital market available. So apart from your Swiggy in specific case, creating a lot of value, I think more such cases are going to be very inspiring for all of us to say, hey, look, we are all building towards one day, one fine day, go public in this country and create value for everybody. So that's the key takeaway for me.
Yeah, of course, it's, you know, very euphoric moment from a startup point of view that, you know, there is one large outcome. And, you know, it's special, a little bit special for me. My first venture was in the food tech space. So I've seen this, you know, 2015-16, Swiggy was born and I was also being pushed that, do you want to do hyperlocal, etc. So, and of course, you know, with Revanth, I've seen the Faso's journey. So there is, you know, a little bit of involvement towards food tech space. I think while there are a lot of these tick marks in terms of, okay, can we build great products? Yes. Is there now depth in the market? Yes. Is there a sizable VC types outcome? That's also now getting proven. So while there are, you know, these very, very large tick marks which have happened, I think what is interesting is for me is that, okay, what does it take 8 quarters out from here for Swiggy to win, or how does it look? What are the leading indicators of that? That, you know, if this is a successful IPO now, because this is an interesting one where there is a clear duopoly and there are these emerging segments of quick commerce which are playing out. So how does that play out is very interesting. And both companies operate in a very different way, right? One is very founder-led and has seen the resilience of, you know, going through the IPO, acquiring a company and then integrating it and having built senior management teams again and again. So one has done it, second is trying to do it, very different DNAs, you know, from that point of view. So it is going to be very interesting from that point of view. That's what is at least exciting for me.
The one area which I would like to kind of focus on, and I think both companies have raised 2.5 odd billion, right, till now. I think Zomato probably in the 20,000 to 25,000 crores of capital raised, and Swiggy also now with the IPO is in the same, you know, 50,000 crore has gone into over the last 10 years into building out these companies. And today, for example, Zomato's market cap is roughly 2.1 lakh crores, right? So that 25,000 crores invested has become 2.1 lakh crores. So I think purely from just a capital appreciation, I think a 15-year journey that kind of 10x is capital. And obviously the view is now as a public company that is profitable, this number keeps increasing. Swiggy, on the other hand, I think similar amount raised, not profitable yet, but I think clear line of sight in that direction. The interesting part is, I think a large part of that $2.5 billion was on the food delivery thesis, okay? Or at least till the last 2 years. I think the last 2 years mein jo bhi capital raise hua, even I think the appreciation of Zomato, I think Zomato at its lowest was valued at $8 billion, at its highest is probably $27 billion. But jo $8 billion or $27 billion ka jo delta hai, in my view, even the public investor would probably possibly say a large part of that delta comes from the Blinkit euphoria and kind of move, right? So how does that stack up? I think one question for me is, Zomato is equal to Zomato food delivery plus Blinkit, which are two totally different ecosystems for the consumer also and for the company also. Swiggy food delivery plus Instamart, which is kind of similar ecosystem, at least for the consumer, ek app hai. If you were to look at the numbers, I don't know, Revanth, you would probably know this better. I think at a monthly level, they are possibly doing, at a food delivery level, maybe 30 to 35 lakh orders per month, but at a quick commerce level is probably in the 2 crore orders per month. So the number of orders on quick commerce are 6 to 7 times and even growing much faster. So now how do the dynamics of, you know, the business models play out with Zomato and Blinkit versus Swiggy and Instamart? I think that's one question I had for you guys.
Well, that's an interesting point. One thing actually, Shantanu, most people generally miss is, I think we all look at capital raise, but when you are calculating IRRs from an investment point of view, which is what I thought you were trying to do when you said how much money has gone in and how much value has been created, technically it's on share price, and share price also has to include dilutions from potential share swap acquisitions, right? So if you actually see the dilution that maybe Zomato would have taken by doing a acquisition of Blinkit, which was earlier Grofers, or they have done acquisitions previously as well. I think the most expensive for them before Blinkit was something that they had done in, I think, 14, 15, a business in the US, which was also a share swap. So there's been some dilution there. And net-net, I think the dilution was a little more for Zomato. I think from a capital efficiency perspective, while the actual dollar amount raised seems equal, the dilution taken by Zomato, I think because they did a few share swap transactions, was a little more. But yeah, against that, if you see their market cap today is roughly 2x of Swiggy. So clearly, both seem to be in the value creation, at least in that similar space. But it's a very interesting question. The fact that you mentioned that most money went into acquire consumers for food delivery, which is now clearly slowing down, by the way. Both CEOs have very clearly mentioned that food delivery is like a 10% growth, which is, I mean, our inflation is 7%. So clearly, food delivery is now on a very, very slow trajectory as such. So where does the value accretion happen if it's in quick commerce, and how much capital will be burnt now in the quick commerce game as well? And this is a question that I think most investors or founders always have. Founders are always irrationally optimistic, yaar, eventually paisa ban jayega. But this battle for the Indian consumer always seems to be far more expensive than what we envisage. And now quick commerce also has a third player, right, in Zepto, every month we see about 100, 200 million raised as such. So clearly, the battle for quick commerce, which is three ways, I think the story on the capital raise is still unclear. I think all three players may need to invest maybe north of $3 to $4 billion over the next couple of years to build out this space, and the ultimate winner is still unclear, right? Like today, it may be a Blinkit as a leader with Zepto and Instamart very neck and neck. At least it seems that now with Flipkart entering with Flipkart Minutes, we don't know how much Walmart and Flipkart Group really want to pump in to try and even make a dent in the quick commerce battle. How serious are Tata and Big Basket on quick commerce? So I think the story may just keep getting played out, right? Like we may see maybe $4 or $5 billion being invested over the next 2 years by every player cumulatively. And whether that's really going to yield to a lot of profitable growth is something that's yet to be seen.
Yeah, I think if you ask me, right, if I just wear a pure public market investor hat today, right, as you guys rightly said, if I just compare the multiples of India's Zomato and Swiggy, right, Zomato is roughly valued 5x of GMV multiple, like DoorDash is 0.5x and Meituan is like 0.2, 0.3x, right? So you can say, one can argue that it's a much richer multiple where Indian players are trading at compared to the counterparts. But I think what people are betting on is the growth, right? So I think if it was just the food delivery, pure food delivery, right, for both players, the growth is in the range of like Swiggy. I look at Swiggy is 15% to 20% and Zomato is 20% to 25%, right? That's a steady state growth, right? So for a public market investor, it's like they'll give you a 25 EBITDA and that will translate to whatever the GMV multiple. But if you look at the grocery, it's growing at somewhere around 100% year on year for almost everybody, right? And in my head, the biggest excitement for people is if you look at India's retail market around $1 trillion, of that 60% is grocery, right? So the biggest thing is there is enough headroom for the same growth to continue compared to food delivery, right? Food delivery may actually taper down to even single digit over next 4 or 5 years, right? So that's not going to bring lot of value. So as a public market investor, I can only give such a rich multiple if I know that this company can continue to grow 40-50% year on year over next, 5-6 years, right? And that is only possible because of the quick commerce, right? And if you ask me in a public market, all the value creation that has accrued to Zomato over last year, like if you look at from the lowest of 50 rupees share price to now almost 260 rupees, the 5x growth, is just because of two things, right? The quick commerce has really, really grown for them. On an adjusted EBITDA level, actually they are break even, by the way, Blinkit today, right? So it's not that they're, so they have also shown that we are growing fast, but with capital efficiency. And that's why they are at the valuation they are at. So I think in my mind, the valuation is because primarily driven by the growth prospect of the quick commerce. Now, if you ask me whether Swiggy will catch up to Zomato's valuation or not, the answer will be clear in next 4 to 5 quarters how they perform. Because the public market likes to see, as a public company, how are you performing quarter after quarter, after quarter, right? So that's exactly what happened with Zomato, right? I think every quarter they just crushed the numbers, right? If you look at the numbers. And public market gave them the valuation they gave them because they believed that this is the company which is going to produce tremendous value from here. Because imagine if some public market guy is taking a bet today on Zomato at this valuation, their expectation is they'll generate 20-30% IRR over next 10 years for them also, right? So I think it's really the headroom for growth and some signs of capital efficiency that players have kind of demonstrated so far is what is driving a lot of value.
Jump to quick commerce. You know, what I was interested in also discussing is that if, let's say, you know, what Darshit is saying, that market is going to evaluate over the next 5 to 8 quarters, and we look at the food delivery business, which is the core business, right? While there is a delta which will come from quick commerce, is it fair to say that, you know, if I go back 2 years ago, I think the equation was maybe 45-55 in favor of Swiggy, to now it has become 58-42 in favor of Zomato, right? And as a CEO, let's say if Harsha was to decide, where should one focus? Should one be focusing, okay, you know, food delivery is going to stabilize, it's not a high growth market, maybe 3x of our GDP growth, 2x of our GDP growth. And, you know, public market may seem to indicate that its delta is going to come from quick commerce. How does one, you know, think about it? Because do you want to, you know, while there was a rush to get to IPO, all of the focus was there. Hence, you know, it was being thought that, okay, you know, they're losing market share on food delivery, trying to become profitable, better unit economics. But how do you stop that? Isn't that, you know, an area of concern if you were looking at from a public market perspective?
So your question is key. If they have gone from 55% market share to now 45% market share, that's what the rough...
In fact, 42 now, at least what latest reports are saying. So, you know, every month they are losing around 1%.
Every quarter, I think.
Is that every quarter? Okay, maybe 1.5%, yeah.
So your worry is that, does the duopoly at some point of time look like monopolistic if someone gets to like 70-75% market share? And therefore, as a CEO, should I be worried to also make sure that I don't slip more and at least keep it at 40 and at some point of time trying to increase it more? Because it's a very, very interesting question, because from what Darshit is saying, agar food delivery mein TAM limited hai, right? And that I have 40-42% of the TAM, but the potential TAM of grocery is 10x of food delivery, and I have to almost like a CEO choose where I should spend my time on. Where should I spend my time on is your question. I think both sides seem to have tried to solve it by having independent CEOs for independent. Like, from what I understand, Rohit Kapoor is the CEO of the food business, and now they have, I think, Amitesh from Flipkart who's going to head Instamart. And maybe it's, I mean, it's a fair ask as a group CEO, but it's almost like at 10, 15, 20 billion dollar ka company chala rahe ho, toh maybe you have independent CEOs who are just strong enough who are, and unleash both on what it takes to win that market. Is that not what both are doing?
No, I was just generally, because Darshit looks at public market also. So how would a public market investor look at it, that, you know, there is a promise that this is, of course, a number one, number two player in food delivery. If that market share starts to go down, and now the narrative becomes that, okay, you know, we are going to double down on quick commerce, because that's like the big prize to be won, then how does, you know, a public market react in such a scenario? Because, you know, you are losing on something on which you got listed. And of course, there is a bigger pie to go after. Isn't that like the core piece to be solved? You know, I'm just thinking from a leading Brock point of view that this has to be solved, you know, and then you go after quick commerce. Or is it like the other way? You know, of course, as a CEO, I would say I would want to do both, but which is like critical. And, you know, I'll also add that this is a network effect business. At the core of this is a supply chain business wherein both the businesses get benefited because of these drivers who are able to capture all the, you know, demands of both the sides,
of quick commerce as well as food. So there is, you know, that benefit. It's not that, you know, while from consumer angle, they might look different.
But slight nuance on this, Chirag, is we have to understand that for, I think Dipinder has been very clear that Zomato and Blinkit will always be independent apps, independent delivery fleets, independent businesses, independent optimizations as well. Whereas it's only, I think, at Swiggy's end where they sort of maybe optimize the delivery fleet into a common piece. So I think the answers could be, from an execution point of view, different. But yeah, I would love to understand Darshit's view on this as well.
So I think if I study the recent news, right, I think it seems like, at least as per that, I'll just first talk about, okay, it seems like Instamart is really catching up Blinkit on, at least on the grocery part, right? And I think, so I think that is definitely not something which is like, you can't lose that, right? That's the battle that is even more fierce than food delivery, because food delivery has only two players. Quick commerce has at least five players, if not more, basically today, and more are coming in, right? So at least in my head, that is something you can't afford to lose as a battle, basically. That's the battle which is going to be played out for over the next 4 or 5 years, right? At least, and there is enough room for everybody to grow, because you are not taking away each other's market share, right? It's just everybody can continue to grow for 100% for a foreseeable future, right? So the market hasn't reached a stage. So at least I feel everybody will continue to invest. I think it will boil down to the capital efficiency of each of the players. If I just look at objectively all the numbers of all the players, it's vastly different. The burn that every player has is just vastly different, like Blinkit versus Instamart versus. So I think it will boil down to not only market share, but how capital efficient, because this is like a retail business. You have a dark store and you have to make the dark store economics work, and then you put more dark stores and more dark stores, right? Unlike food delivery, there is not a lot of network effect involved here, right? You have to make every dark store work, basically. So at least that is something which is everybody has to invest in, right? If I was a public market investor, today the Zomato is being valued so much because they are the leader in food delivery by probably 15-16% higher market share. But in quick commerce, they are almost 2x of Instamart, right? I think that is at least what I would look at, right? So I don't think it's either or. In at least if I were to look at it, it's both, actually. You have to defend your market share at least in food delivery and probably try and take it upward of, you know, maybe 45 or near to 50. But the way quick commerce is moving, if you lose your site for next 2 years, I think it will be a huge loss for you as a company, basically, right? So that's how
I wanted to actually ask the three of you, like I've been thinking about this a bit, right? And I would love to get some perspective. What I am seeing running a, you know, consumer business is that every commerce is going to become quick commerce now, okay? So we know that Reliance Retail, for example, each of their stores is going to become a dark store. Vishal Mega Mart, each of their stores is going to become a dark store. Big Basket is getting into it. DMart right now is saying they won't, but there is no way that they won't. If the consumer moves, their consumer moves, DMart will convert their stores into dark stores. We are seeing Tata get into it. So now, this is not a three. Amazon is getting into it with more, right? Flipkart Minutes, we are seeing tremendous growth. So ye jo overall thesis hai na, ki ये 600 बिलियन डॉलर का जो मार्केट है, विच इज द इंडियन रिटेल ग्रोसरी मार्केट, वो अपन 20 साल पहले ये बोलते थे दैट मॉडर्न ट्रेड विल बिकम 10-15% ऑफ दिस मार्केट, एंड यू नो दैट्स द नेक्स्ट. बट मॉडर्न ट्रेड इज लाइक इट्स काइंड ऑफ फ्लैटर्ड टू डिसीव ऑन दिस. दे हैव नॉट बीन एबल टू ग्रो. रेंटल कॉस्ट्स हैव काइंड ऑफ, यू नो, बीन डिफिकल्ट. इट्स वेरी कैपेक्स इंटेंसिव. डीमार्ट इज बीन अ गुड सक्सेस स्टोरी बट स्ट्रगलिंग नाउ. जो मॉडर्न ट्रेड फ्लैटर्ड टू डिसीव वाला था फॉर 20 इयर्स, आई थिंक क्विक कॉमर्स विल बी दैट, यू नो, दैट नेक्स्ट wave of moving some of the 600 billion. So let's say $50 to $100 billion potentially can come into quick commerce, and it won't be a, like you're right, Darshit, you're right, it won't be a 3 or 5 horse race. It will probably be a 25-30 horse race, and everyone will try to get this $100 billion which will move to quick, which is basically everyone who's, including us, yaar, people who are buying on D2C are now expecting delivery in 3 hours. So delivery and Ecom Express and all these guys have started to do same day delivery logistics and all that. So quick, like commerce is going to become quick commerce. So how, which means that quick commerce as a capability will become very commoditized if it gets cracked. It won't be like only a Zepto, Blinkit or Instamart kind of a thing. It'll be everyone. The second thing is that if you're looking at, let's say, Swiggy's, if I was Harsha or Dipender and I'm running a 1 or 2 lakh crore market cap business and I'm saying, mereko retail investor ko over like 5 to 7 years, I want to convert this into a 7 to 8 lakh crore valuation business, right? Grow 3-4x from where I am right now, right? Then we have to get 5 to 6 lakh crores of additional value. Which means I have to create 1 to 2 lakh crores of additional revenue. And if food delivery is kind of going to grow 10-15% year on year, then 1 to 2 lakh crores of additional revenue has to come from quick commerce or some third thing. Or commerce in some way, right? And just to give context, DMart is 50,000 crores today. So Dipinder and Harsha ye sochte honge ki mereko DMart ka 3x banna hai. So Adit from Zepto has said this, that we will be as big as DMart or bigger than DMart or whatever. But we all know how insane execution was done by DMart to get to 50-60,000 crores. We are saying Zomato, Swiggy and all quick commerce, whoever is kind of looking at this valuation upside from now or buying into Swiggy today, is looking at ki tum ek 1.5 lakh crore ka revenue business banoge agle 5 saal mein. That's the underwriting you're doing. So I find that extremely exciting because I feel ki yaar consumer movement to ho raha hai, lekin unlike Amazon, Flipkart or Uber, Ola, which built out duopolies with a lot of venture funding over the last 10 years, right? A lot of them did it with private capital. So you did not have the scrutiny of a public market investor to see how efficient you are. Darshan, jo aapne bola abhi, that the efficiency is vastly different. Now, I don't think quick commerce players, given they're all going public, will have that liberty. Now you'll have Walmart looking over Flipkart's bottom line. You'll have, of course, public markets looking over Swiggy's Zomato bottom lines and so on. You won't have that kind of capital, frankly, to build it out or, you know, to throw around. So this either might take much longer, in which case IRR maths get screwed, or maybe the consumer is moving really fast and efficiently at a dark store level, in which case, there is a case to be made. But this is something that I find, like, if I were the CEO, I would find it, like, the richness of valuation will kind of scare me a little bit. But I would love to know what you guys think.
This one, but segue in this, I think this answers your question, right, Chirag? I love the fact how Shantanu put it, that if I have to deliver a 3x from here, because Darshit mentioned the word 25% IRR. So 5 years, 3x is what I need to do for 25% IRR. And if I want to 3x my market cap from here, I should ideally 3x my revenue or at least 2x my revenue with much more higher margin, better margin profile. If the entire food industry or food delivery industry is going at 10-15%, I think the battle is going to end up being only on quick com. Because otherwise, the value creation will be very, very hard. So, contrary to your point, Darshit, I mean, it's okay to lose a little bit more market share in food. I don't know what is the right way to look at it. But at no point in time, if I have a war chest of a billion or a billion and a half, I would deploy 80% of it to just make sure that, you know, get this revenue from quick commerce or expand in quick commerce as fast as possible. Just to make sure that it's the size of the prize. And the capital allocation decision seems to be much easier then. Right, yeah.
At least, you know what, after hearing you guys, it even solidifies. Long term, of course, the answer is because size of prize is more, quick commerce, you have to win. What Shantanu said, 1.5 lakh crores of, you know, revenue needs to be done. So it can't come from food delivery. But I think in the next 3-4 quarters, if they start to get to like 30s number on market share on food delivery, my sense is the stock is going to tank. And hence, you know, what we should get to is that what kind of execution battle it is for Swiggy. It's right from Super App, you know, and they've played the game a little differently. Zomato has again gone out and said that, you know, Super App does not work, whereas Swiggy is doing Super App. So that's one very different take. Two, you know, as I was saying, that from an execution point of view, at least looks like Zomato has now a fresh blood already there, which is recharged to go out and execute. Swiggy needs to go out and demonstrate. They have had exits. They have now had new people come in terms of, you know, how much time do they have to go out and execute, start executing. It's very hard. You know, I'm just starting to think of it as a CEO that, you know, I have to deliver on those 1.5 lakh crore revenue expectation. I have to not lose share or at least increase share on food delivery. I have to build an internal muscle. Now there are new people coming in. You know, there is this downside of 9,000 crore given to 5,000 people. You know what Dipinder said, that all of those people are now going to be like, I've made enough in my life. they are not going to be super motivated. So it's like, you know, you have to rebuild the entire machinery again. So it's going to take a lot of effort. It's very interesting for me, you know, and what are going to be the leading indicators of that? That, you know, are they able to hire? Are they able to deliver on some of their guidances? It's quite tricky.
Also, that's a very good point, right? The way Dipinder says it, which is, you know, people, once you have 100 crores in the bank account, your motivation levels are going to be different. And people might not like to hear it, but it is damn true. And you can see in the way he was saying it, I actually saw his face and felt iske dimag mein exactly what 10 log hai jiske baare mein ye bol rahe aur bata nahi pa rahe now. Right? So you could see he has very specific examples, and that's what the CEO does. He will kind of allocate capital and people. But in addition, na Chirag, jo Revan bol rahe hai ki abhi mere paas 1-2 billion ka war chest hai, ab main deploy karunga. Ye again private nahi hai na. आप डिप्लॉय करोगे तो इट स्टार्ट हिटिंग आवर बॉटम लाइन ना, बिकॉज़ इफ यू लेट्स से इंस्टामार्ट वांट्स टू लॉन्च 1000 स्टोर्स, दे कैन डू इट विद द मनी दे हैव, बट देयर द क्वार्टरली पीएनएल ऑन इंस्टामार्ट विल लुक हॉरिबल एटलीस्ट फॉर अ 3-6 month पीरियड, बिकॉज ईच स्टोर विल टेक सम टाइम टू काइंड ऑफ रैंप अप ऑन इट बॉटम लाइन. सो हाउ डू यू बैलेंस दैट? सो फूड डिलीवरी ऑल्सो कांट कम डाउन टू 35%, इंस्टामार्ट ऑल्सो हैज टू रैंप अप. बाय द वे, आई हैव टू चेंज माय सीनियर टीम ऑल्सो, और एटलीस्ट, एंड दे हैव डन अ फैंटास्टिक जॉब. I think Sairam I have worked with at More. He's joined Swiggy. I have personally experienced with him. Very solid guys they're bringing in. But everyone has some ramp up time and, you know, some, you know, kind of and public companies, unfortunately, alag philosophical discussion whether quarterly measurement is the right way to do it. But they don't have that kind of benefit. So Darshit, again, would love to know how you would think about, like, how would analysts think, or how would you think about this?
No, I think I had this interesting article that I read somewhere, that somebody asked this question to one of the VCs, that how can people like Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg have the motivation to run the companies for 20 years, you know, 25 years? Like, what is it like? I think it's just that some founders have a very different drive in them, right? They don't think it like, okay, I made 100 crore, I've arrived in life, right? They just want to create an impact, right? So I feel like there will be founders who just want to build the company and become, let's say, an ex-certain data in the country, right? Basically, who is building an empire, right? Their drive is not just... So to me, it will really boil down to that. It will take some time for us to figure out how to... And there will be a clear difference in those founders versus the founders who at some point are going to say that, hey, look, I've done enough. I'm going to now hand it over to a professional CEO. And to be honest, it's not like professional CEO can't create value, right? There are enough examples of, like, look at Uber, right? For example, a tremendous value creation that is done. In my view, I feel like people are underestimating the execution complexity involved in quick commerce, if you ask me, right? So food delivery is you picking up from restaurant and delivering to the customer house. So it's a really... At a base level, it's a route optimization, and hence how well efficiently you utilize your fleet and how much is your density of customer demand and blah, 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 right? Boils down to that. I think the one added complexity in quick commerce is the dark store as a unit. What inventory you keep, what kind of inventory planning you are able... There is a cost to inventory, right? Just remember, there is a balance sheet side of that business which is not applicable to your food delivery business. There's no balance sheet. You're not keeping an inventory, right? Imagine if you are running 2,000, 3,000 dark stores and you are keeping an inventory in every dark store. Just imagine the cost of inventory, right? If you look at today, if you ask any public market investor, the two most important metrics they look for a retail business, right? To an extent, this is a retail business, are per square foot sales and the inventory turns, right? Those are the two most important metrics. Today, I think because of the hyper growth, people are not asking these hard questions that, hey, look, what is your efficiency? But if you look at Zomato's last quarterly update, they have actually started tracking that number. What is my per square foot sales, right? I think that's an important number to track. So I feel it's not going to be that you have unlimited capital to deploy and then you will prove the capital efficiency, right? So unlike a private market, in a public market, you don't have unlimited time to prove that you can build this in a very capital efficient manner. So I think while people say that every category can be a quick commerce, I feel it will also boil down to this equation of inventory, like fashion, for example. I feel it's very hard to do fashion in a quick commerce way, because what In grocery, there is a limited number of SKUs. In fashion, the inventories don't move fast. Most offline retail business operate at 6 months of inventory. Grocery operates at 1 week of inventory, right? Just imagine the difference in inventory you have to keep in. So I feel while it's good to say that everything may move to quick commerce, but what is feasible to do in a capital efficient manner is also going to matter in a long term. And how people are able to prove that is what is going to boil down.
Does that mean, Darshit, that if any of these guys, any quick commerce company is doing 1 lakh crores of revenue annually, where 10,000 crore mahine ka kar raha hai, basically 2 to 3,000 crores of inventory is turning, even at their most efficient, that kind of lock-ins are there. Oh, wow. That's crazy.
And this is if you are the most capital efficient player, by the way. That is if you are the most, right.
That's a huge assumption to make. Also, assuming your capital efficient, which means you've gotten your inventory assortments right, you've gotten your dark stores already in place, growth has now come down to 10-15% year on year, etc. Tab jaake aap 2-3,000 crore base case pe you will have to lock into inventory. For the IRR math to work. Wow. That's very interesting.
I think you spoke about founders, but I think Shantanu was talking about the team as such. You know, when I think this is an interesting point. And
before we jump into execution side of things, I had one interesting thing to share. So these are the famous, you know, pillars of Amazon: price, selection, convenience. So these are mapped across, you know, what we were discussing, that is quick commerce going to grow across all channels? Or is everything going to become quick? And then, you know, this is mapped across convenience, price, and selection. So, you know, let's look at quick commerce. So quick commerce, of course, has very high leverage, or they are over-indexing on convenience. They are not so much over-indexing on price. They would, you know, want to get more efficiencies there. But what is going to be the limiting factor is selection. You know, because they are situated in high dense dark store places, so there is going to be, you know, that's going to be the natural limitation. Now, of course, the question is, let's say tomorrow, would Blinkit want to become all products e-commerce? That's, of course, is an opportunity. But if you look at e-commerce was always focusing more on price, more on selection. You look at Amazon, you know, they've been saying that, okay, we have the highest selection. They would want to focus on getting the prices low. And convenience was probably the second or third lever. You look at Kirana stores. Kirana store, which also takes us to an interesting debate, which is happening, is that is quick commerce hitting into e-commerce, or is quick commerce hitting into more modern retail and Kirana stores? I think this should help us answer some of that. That, you know, Kirana, for example, you know, from a selection point of view, has only 1,000 SKUs, whereas quick commerce has 9,000 SKUs already. So that should answer some of that question, that is the share moving from here to here? If you are getting everything in 10 minutes, no extra price, and these guys used to sell mostly at MRP. Right? So my sense is this is moving from here to here. Our data, by the way, GoQuick data also indicates that this is not happening, this is happening.
Sorry, what is not happening?
So share is not moving from e-commerce to quick commerce. Share is moving from Kirana store modern retailer to quick commerce.
Interesting.
I would agree with you, Chirag, because fundamentally, this is a great way to look at it, that I think the price, you're right, always at an MRP. By the way, even price would be green for quick commerce, if you ask me. Because one of the things that we are seeing in quick commerce is, I think there are a lot of charts that news journalists have put out, where the price on a Zepto or a Blinkit or an Instamart is the same as what your brands are retailing on Amazon or Flipkart. So, or which is usually lower than, because there's always some discount, which is not at MRP, which is what it was at a modern trade guy or Kirana. And at a modern trade, fundamentally, the reason you see a lot of discounts happening is because that's what modern trade guys, I'm assuming, Shantanu, you can put more light on this. We are not in modern trade. Is that the modern trade folks would say, guys, you are anyway always discounting or doing a buy two get one on your website, so you can't retail at MRP here. And they had the leverage against brands to say, boss, agar yahan rakhna hai to aapko ye karna padega, pay for visibility, do this kind of promotions. But the Kirana guy never had leverage over
brands as such, because it's like, you know, whatever, 1 lakh Kirana stores or 10 lakh Kirana stores across the country, for them it's just a distribution touch point. So I think all three become green for quick commerce then, which is the best price, the best convenience, and at least in terms of selection, broadly you have more selection than now all Kiranas, but also almost against all modern trade guys, because whatever is selling in modern trade, that selection was already there in a quick commerce.
Nee, footfalls are falling na, modern to the modern trade. Chirag, just show, keep the chat open na. It's a very interesting chat. Because there is another point. But Chirag, just hold your thought. I wanted to make one more point. If you see the quick commerce yellow green versus the modern trade yellow green, it's completely complementary. And while I agree that over a period of time, quick commerce will also give better price, but the reality of the situation is, quick commerce mein consumer level price sensitivity is still low. Consumer is okay to pay higher, because consumer is getting it in 10-15 minutes. So consumer is like, okay, I'll pay higher. Also, the cart in quick commerce is extremely sticky. So in a quick commerce, on a Blinkit, Zepto or Instamart, if I've added 6 things to cart, doodh, anda, bread, to me, I also need. उसके बाद मेरे को कुछ कुछ तो दिखा रहे हैं वो, फिर उस 300 रुपए की कोई गिफ्टिंग आइटम है या फिर अदर इलेक्ट्रॉनिक्स आइटम, लाइक आई ऑर्डर दिस यू नो पोर्ट्रॉनिक स्टफ. द कार्ट कन्वर्जन आर वेरी हाई ऑन क्विक कॉमर्स कंपेयर टू ई कॉमर्स. सो व्हाट इज हैपनिंग इज दैट ए, बिकॉज दीज गाइज आर बिल्डिंग इन पब्लिक, दे आर गोइंग टू कम टू ब्रांड्स एंड नेगोशिएट हार्ड फॉर मार्जिन, विच आर ऑलरेडी सीइंग हैपन, राइट? सो एनी क्विक कॉमर्स कंपनी इज गोइंग टू बी लाइक, बॉस वी कैन नॉट फंड ब्रांड ग्रोथ. The way Amazon and Flipkart funded a lot of our growth, I don't think quick commerce is going to do that for brands. They're going to make sure that consumer pays price and brands give discounts. Second thing that's going to happen is that I think that jo monthly modern trade ka jo 1st to 8th of the month pe jo consumer salary ke baad jaake monthly jo basket bana ke le aati thi na, a lot of that basket size is going to shrink. I think the habit will continue. Yeah, I think families will continue to go to a Reliance, DMart, more, whatever is in their locality. Ki bas mahine ka hum log le aate hain. But because the inventory is already well stocked because of their constant quick commerce purchases, that monthly basket is going to come down. So, jo aapka kirana store to quick commerce movement hai, I agree with it, but it might take more time. But modern trade to quick commerce movement, in my view, will be a lot quicker.
But do you believe the e-commerce...
Go ahead.
What you're saying is, Shantanu, modern trade to quick commerce has already happened. Kirana to quick commerce will happen. But do we believe e-commerce to quick commerce will happen?
Wo thoda difficult. Like, I don't have a handle on that. But to the earlier point, right, if you just go through this chart line by line, modern trade mein, a lot of them will become quick commerce themselves. So that's the other thing. So even if modern trade will move to quick commerce, will it move to their own quick commerce? So will a Reliance retail customer go to Reliance retail app and get it fulfilled in 1 hour? Let's say there's a home in Mulund. Mulund ka Reliance retail will deliver to her in an hour. So whether she will do that or whether... Because frankly, the consumer experience in a Reliance retail is very different. You go there, you'll always see 10 new products. Jo quick commerce hai, e-commerce mein bhi jo discovery model lene, wo nahi hai abhi. So if you go to a modern trade store once a month, you'll see, like, people like to see ki kya naya aaya hai, kya launch hua hai. Like detergents, for example, movement from powder to liquid has fundamentally happened. 70% of detergents is now liquid. It's crazy. Fundamentally happened because modern trade mein 10-10 liter ke packs aa gaye wahan pe. Because consumers are, consumer bought it. Jo quick commerce pe nahi hota. So I don't know whether it'll happen to these 3-5 guys or whether it'll happen to, you know, in some other way.
Maybe, you know, Revan, that takes us to, you know, or would quick commerce be ever be able to do demand generation? You know, they'll definitely be able to do
very
demand capture. But that is what, you know, e-commerce, at least the long tail e-commerce is about. That there is so much selection and it is by nature long tail, which is what happens on Amazon also. While there is, you know, skewness in terms of electronics, etc. That will continue. However, having said that, what Shantanu was saying, that does it mean that more modern retailers started to do quick commerce? Yes. Does it mean that in e-commerce also, or in traditional e-commerce also, it starts to become a feature? Quick commerce starts to become a feature for sure. So I think overall there is a secular shift to this lever of convenience. That can you deliver faster? That's for sure happening. So all trends in terms of, you know, all companies which are trying to build in that space should be hot.
It's a fair point, Chirag, but I think maybe this is a good segue to, I mean, I really, really keep wondering and keep debating this with our team as well, right? Who are you really serving in India? Because while you're saying that there is a trend towards convenience, I think it's only for the top 30 million households. like today, in my view, actually there is a shift from e-commerce to quick commerce, but it's only for the top 20 million, 30 million consumers who have A, access to quick commerce, B, are actually okay to pay a platform fee plus some delivery charges of 20, 30 bucks to get the same product. Because I can tell you for this for sure, all brands are pricing their products same on Amazon and Blinkit, ideally. Because you're ending up playing higher margin to a quick commerce player because their costs of inventory, cost of delivery, etc. are different. Your prices should also be higher there, but that is not happening. And I think that's a... and especially because I think everybody believes that the quick commerce customer can afford it and they are paying for convenience, then why should the product not be priced higher? This is a question I have for my team as well. That why are we pricing a product the same on Blinkit or Amazon? To which the answer usually comes and says that, oh, the Blinkit guys have said that you have to maintain parity. I'm like, boss, matlab, customer alag hai, behavior alag hai, toh fir then why should? So I think this has to evolve. But more critically, and especially if you also look at the fact that last week we also had, or 10 days back, we also had Meesho's FY24 results, right? A phenomenal, almost $1 billion in revenue, very close to profitability. But Meesho's building for a very different India, right? And I know it's largely fashion, but even if it was, let's say, largely beauty and personal care, I don't know when it will start paying for convenience. Today, India 1, and I think the India 1, India 2, India 3 nomenclature is fairly well known, where the top 30 million households will definitely do quick commerce. As long as the price is same, they will actually move from e-commerce to quick commerce as well. They'll pay
even
a small...
Even this for our viewers, I think will be good for you to just like define India 1, 2, 3 for everyone if they don't know.
I mean, roughly India 1 would be top 30 million households, people who fly domestically, internationally, people who own credit cards. Fundamentally, as Kunal keeps saying, 60% of GDP spends in India is driven by these 30 million households, right? Roughly would actually be 60 million people. The next 70 million households would be around India 2. And the GDP per capita for India 1 would be close to 10,000-12,000 US dollars GDP per capita. Then obviously there's India 2, which is, yeah, I think the chart would help. And which is about 70 million odd households, and the rest is India 3. Maybe you can zoom this a little, Chirag, for everyone to see. Or maybe we can share it later. And yeah. But broadly, does quick commerce move beyond India 1? I am not so sure. Because the price sensitivity in India 2 and India 3 is phenomenal. Like Meesho's built $1 billion in revenue. Like I still remember 8 years back, everyone said, why would Meesho succeed? Flipkart and Amazon are the real deal, right? Like people will not change their habits. Amazon is sticky. Flipkart is sticky. Both have captured the e-commerce market in India. And fast forward 6-7 years and now you have Meesho who's built $1 billion in revenue, still growing the fastest. It has 220 million e-commerce transacting users, profitable as a business. They have figured out a way. I mean, CK Pralad would be proud, right? They have figured out a way to make money at the bottom of the pyramid. And it is reality. So I think that e-commerce it's going to be a while before that moves to quick commerce, because that value-seeking crowd is not going to necessarily pay for convenience. And I think that could be an interesting understanding, because for me, if I look at all consumer internet wins, like we started this discussion by saying phenomenal decade of value creation by Swiggy, India won, right? The entire total quick commerce transacting base is less than 20 million. Like the entire people who have the app and forget using it, the transacting base is even smaller. It's like a 10 million user base will go to 20, 25 million. But that's it. That's India won again for you, right? But Urban Company, Swiggy, Zomato, a lot of these businesses, consumer internet businesses, have got created for India 1. There is one or two examples. Meesho is the prime example of maybe creating for an India 2 or an India 3. I'm also not very sure what their transacting user base is, but surely not India 1, right? Does the segue happen in that way, right? You will have winners of business models in India 1, India 2, and India 3, and these individual battles will continue to be fought, and the segments of convenience, selection, and price actually matter to which segment you are playing for. And I mean, because I think we have to move beyond the Swiggy topic as well, but considering Meesho gave phenomenal results, I don't think anybody had really figured out how to make a valuable business for India 2 or India 3. And to build a consumer internet marketplace for that segment, I think is very, very commendable. So would love to understand from you, Darshit, Chirag, because you look at e-commerce in detail, you at GoQuick, you see India 1, 2, 3, all three behave, and you see the behavior of these consumers also very, very differently.
It's actually, you know, what you were saying, it's actually quite fascinating that on one end, we are doubling down on convenience. Whereas if you look at the way Meesho is playing the game, they are saying we are insourcing logistics. They are doing Valmo, which is a play on that it doesn't matter if it gets delivered in 4 or 6 days, right? So because their audience, they are trying to give them more selection, right? So they are building on that selection as well as low price. So there, by the way, you know, I did some crude maths. If you want, we can go through it. Their average AOV looks like $300, right? Which is quite low if you compare to traditional e-commerce, which is almost same as, by the way, quick commerce. Quick commerce is already is in the same zone, but e-commerce is like $1,500-$2,000. So very different businesses. And
net of electronics kitna hoga, Chirag? Net of electronics hata do to kitna hoga e-commerce ka AOV?
So I think it should be closer to 1,300. That's where at least our average order value is across the network.
I would always assume like the average AO, like the average order value, the word average kind of really skews it on e-commerce because of phones and electronics. If you remove that category, I always felt like the mean would be a better number, like the mean order value. But pata nahi kya number hai wo e-commerce mein.
For us, because we don't do any mobiles as such, which are like, which skew the number, our average value is like 1,300-1,400.
Oh, wow. Interesting. But good point on Meesho, by the way. I also feel like, I don't know whether you saw this, you know, this article recently on, you know, like tier 2 India, tier 1 taste. I think Dipanjan at Fireside had written it around how, like, just because of democratization of the internet and content availability across the board, and, you know, there is no difference in taste in terms of, you know, urban versus rural, or, you know, even the kind of, for example, I don't know whether you guys, like younger tier 2, tier 3 Indian men, like their top music choice has now become hip hop and rap. And that is now defining a lot of the the fashion choices that they're making also, right? And it's very unique. So there is like, it's very hard to like make these hard lines in terms of consumption patterns also. Sorry, Chirag, you were saying you were doing some maths, which is...
I think what Shantanu was saying, this is also an interesting one, which I saw on Twitter. This is users on these popular e-commerce apps. So the green one is Meesho. So it's almost neck to neck with respect to Amazon now. This is number of DAU, I guess. Yeah, DAU share.
Wow. What's that blue line?
The blue line is Flipkart.
I think this last jump, na, last 2-3 months wala jump, na, ye Flipkart minutes ka jump hoga mere hisab se.
So this is, I think, sale period. So this is October starting.
How could the video? Yeah, you're right.
Sale period. But surprisingly, Amazon has dropped.
Correct. I actually think this
is a real thing.
This is the quick commerce impact in my view.
We have so many topics to discuss.
No, but I think taking a step back, I still think, you know, because... I mean, we also have a VC in our midst. I love to discuss this topic of value creation in this country. And phenomenally, if you look at the last 15 years, fundamentally, we've had very few companies that have created phenomenal value, right? And consumer internet or marketplaces or consumer tech companies have seen the highest amount of capital go in from the private capital industry. I actually, if you think about it, you know, there's been Zomato, there's Swiggy, there's a few mobility companies. I mean, Uber is not technically built in India, but let's take Ola, Rapido. So there are a few segments in this vertical marketplaces, Nykaa, FirstCry, all of them predate 2015. And the only company that got created post-2015 is Meesho in the consumer internet space, right? But if you see, it's not in India one company. And now technically Instamart and Blinkit, which is technically 15 odd, I think. Zepto is the only one which is building for India one, if you ask me, post-2015, which has actually seen strong PMF and will potentially succeed and list, etc., etc. What worries me is that 30 million user base, capturing that 30 million user base is where everybody is fighting. One person stood up and said, I'll capture India 3 or I don't know whether we should. I think broadly that chart that you showed, Chirag, was India 3. India 2 may, maybe Flipkart is the winner. Is that the only way to build? Because if you see all of these companies, it's like what, 10 companies are broadly capturing all of the marketplace / consumer internet value within India 1, 2 and 3. Is there a play left for, you know, entrepreneurs today to come in and say, "Kiar, I'll do something in India 1. What will you really build? I mean, will you? I saw a company now saying we'll do food delivery in 10 minutes. Got funded. Maybe that's India 1 to yehi chahta rahega, right? More and more convenience, and that will keep. I don't know what it, where will it end? Maybe I think there was a joke I saw on X where building ke niche ek button press karo aur grocery upar aa jayega. Like that is the next level of things that people will want, right? But is there a way to build more in India 2 and India 3 for that matter, from a consumer internet perspective? Because if I look at Swiggy and Meesho, that both we have discussed, very different segments that they are solving for. Both of them have taken 10 years but gotten to $1 billion odd revenue and success, profitability. I'm sure Meesho will also list next year. But in the consumer internet space, is this the only way to build? Pick up India 1, 2 or 3 and then say what is an unsolved problem and then hopefully raise a lot of private capital and build out something that consumers would love.
So let's take India 1, right? Your definition of India 1. I think there are two things about India 1, right? One is here and now of 30 million households, right? But remember, that's the fastest growing segment of the pyramid in this country. That's going to grow almost 8-10% year on year. So India will have 150 million households in that category in 20 years from now, right? Which is a huge, like almost 5x, right, of that 30 million. So if I take a 15-20 years view, I feel that's a great bet to have. Like, I think the other thing we all have to remember is things like food delivery. Let me give an example. Today in India, food delivery frequency is much lower compared to China and US. Why? Because we all have cooks in our house, basically, right? Who can cook the food every day and give it to us. For us, food delivery is like once in a while we want to order from outside, and that's why we do that. But remember, in 10 years, that won't be the case in this country. 10, 15 years, there won't be enough people. There will be more people at the top of the pyramid will want cooks, but there won't be enough people who want to be the cooks, right, basically. And hence, this, we may probably be the last generation who can afford to have this luxury of helps in our house, right? And I think that was the case in China 20 years back. Today, they don't have that luxury, right? And that is the key driver of the number of orders that food delivery companies are getting from the consumer per month compared to what is in India, right? So while here and now I understand there is this constraint of 30 million consumers and there is a certain behavior, but I feel if I take a long-term view of next 10 to 15 years, I think the people who have built a distribution for this, right, to say today I am Swiggy, any new consumer who is going to join that 30 million pyramid is going to order from Swiggy, right? That is the bet that people are taking, that these are the moment the people will have money, they will first go on Swiggy and order the food from that, right? I think that is what is the advantage, that you build the distribution and naturally will capture that consumers as and when people move upward in the pyramid, right? I think that's the first thing. So while here and now I understand there are constraints, but I feel 15-20 years, this is a great bet to take. Second is, I think, let's take an example. It's a category by category answer, right? For example, for grocery, for me, it matters. The convenience matters. But maybe for appliance, what matters to me is the selection, or I want to go and check out 10 washing machines and see which one I want to buy, right? I am not going to just in 10 minutes order a washing machine from a quick commerce, right? So whether e-commerce will move to quick commerce is really a category by category answer, right? So if you look at e-commerce, 60% is electronics, right? Of that, again, 50-60% is mobile phones. So mobile phone is 35-40% of the e-commerce today, right? The question is, will consumer want 10 minutes mein ki mera phone aa jaye, or they want to go and explore like 15 different phones and then order one from that, right? So I don't think everything is going to be about convenience, right? I personally don't feel fashion is even going to be, even e-commerce has not been able to capture, right? Everybody is going offline, because now the answer is, I want to go and experience clothes offline, right? I don't even want to buy online, right? So I think it's going to be category by category answer, in my opinion, about India 1, right? What will move to quick commerce? What will move to e-commerce and what will be offline, right? There is a huge wave of offline today because there are categories which are naturally offline, right? Jewelry, like Bluestone used to be a portfolio company of Kalari, as you know, Revant. The answer for them was offline is way, naturally offline is a way better way to sell jewelry than online, right? So I think, I feel it's about category by category answer. But India will have enough depth in 15 years from now to even pick up a niche and build large companies, right? Like I think, just look at, for example, healthcare in this country, right? I think so far people have not solved. There isn't enough that has been solved, but I feel there's a huge problem in India, right? So I don't think we are going to run out of problems as far as India one is concerned. The consumption basket is there. But I think you're right. India 2 and 3 ke liye, there will be a platform, and it's really about capturing various behaviors. So if you ask me, like the way I think about it, it's a consumer behavior that you're capturing. So e-commerce is capturing the consumer who are going to the mall and buying from the branded stores. Well, Meesho is capturing the consumer who are going to a local market and buying the unbranded goods, right? And there is a market for, enough market for both of them. So I think it's about what is your insight about what is the behavior you are capturing. For example, I feel like the way fashion is sold today, maybe it can be reimagined, right? With the advent of AI, why should I just look at the t-shirt and buy it? What can more be done to penetrate? Today, fashion e-commerce is penetrated less than 10% in this country, right? 90% fashion is buying still happening offline, right? So I think there is enough opportunities for you to capture various consumer behaviors in both India 1, India 2, and India 3, basically.
Do you guys see, like, by the way, I don't know whether you saw this, right? And every, like, large consumer product, like, I don't know much about other categories, versus like maybe jewelry or otherwise, but look at consumer products, right? Look at FMCG. Last few years have been difficult. Like, there is a consumption decline that is now undeniable. Earlier, we would think it is because of supply chain issues, COVID, all of these things. But now there is significant kind of consensus that there is a consumption volume growth, decline, or volume kind of stagnation across categories, which kind of comes in the way. Like earlier, we would think that, you know, this 30 million will become 150 million over the next 20 years. People are moving up the pyramid, and the Indian middle class is like the fastest growing demographic world over. As, you know, kind of incomes, you know, socioeconomic, economic strata movement upwards becomes very clear. But, you know, see Asian Paints result over the last, you know, couple of quarters, especially the last one, Nabur ko dekh lo aap, Colgate, like these are now, you know, these are kind of clear proxies for consumption. Is a clear
would you split this, Shantanu? Sorry to interrupt, but would you split this also? Like, if you looked at a non-consumer internet marketplace business, like you're saying, consumer product, pure consumption basket stocks, and look at their results and split them as what are they serving, India 1, India 2, or India 3. Again, the only startup company that I think has got listed in the consumer goods space is Mamaearth. Again, they reported revenues, and if you leave out the one-time inventory hit, there was still a slowdown in the core Mamaearth brand, which is a little, I'm not sure whether it serves India 1 or India 2, but it is the most mass brand amongst the house of brands that they have, right? So do you see a consumption slowdown in India 2 and India 3 versus India 1? Because I think that would be, again, the interesting aspect, because from what I hear from most, like if you do a dip test around what is growing today, what are the categories that are growing for Amazon, growing for Quickcom, versus what is not growing for Amazon or a Flipkart? Or even if you talk to Reliance Retail and look at that as a broad index, there seems to be a focus that India 2 and India 3 consumption is slowing down significantly, but India 1 still continues very, very strongly.
That's a very good point. So I think companies, and they will come up some of the examples you gave, I do feel like India 1 consumption is for these companies a big result of premiumization and not really volume growth, right? So for example, a large, like, I don't know whether you guys know this, but muesli is bigger than cereals today. Right, so there is clear premiumization in that angle. We are seeing if companies are able to premiumize well, then I think India 1, they're able to capture more, and then, you know, volume growth is not so consequential, you're still able to grow in other ways. But for the most part, they're still very volume dependent in terms of growth, repeat rates, volume dependent, and so on. So,
but if you see value growth, even if you include premiumization, there is growth in India one for them. Value growth, right?
Yeah.
See, in India, we have to spend in value, right? Like employee expenses value, rent expenses value. So as long as revenue is increasing and value terms, you are getting more from an India one customer, it's still something that ideally people will focus on, because that's the narrative I see from large consumer good companies like Unilever as well, that we are focusing on premiumization because we want to extract more. That's what the India One, for example, I don't think they use the terms India One, Two, Three, but I think that's what broadly they are saying. And for me, that's the bigger worry. So I take your point, Darshit, on the theory of 30 million going to 150 million, but I'm not sure that's happening on the ground, because India 2 doesn't seem to be spending that kind of money that India 1 is. If I look at all the results today or the last 2-3 years, seems to be very acutely driven by, if you have the large part of your customer as India 1, you are going okay. If not, even if you have a little bit of India 2, there seems to be a marked slowdown in consumption.
Yeah, Gillette ko dekh lo. Before I, that's it, hold your thought. I would love for you to respond to this. But if you look at this, look at Gillette. It is insane. These guys have done a 20% price increase across SKUs. They've launched Gillette Labs, which is like a super premium product at 59 rupees. From like Vector to Sensor XL to Mark 3 to even their 20 rupee Presto has gone up to 25, 26 rupees. Across the board, Beastaka price increase in a category like this is unheard of. But it is very clear that volume growth nahi hai, so kind of figure out a way to absorb the price and then grow in other ways. But sorry, Darshit, sorry I interrupted you.
So I agree, Rivant. I think I agree with you, in a short term, it's going to be, maybe it's a slowdown of consumption for the companies which are already pan-India and which have kind of penetrated the market, and probably now they are the companies which are going to rely on how fast the consumption is going in the country, right? But I feel for a startup, there is enough headroom to grow, right? Because you're not hit a stage where you are relying on India's consumption to grow for your growth, right? Basically, right? That's not the stage most startups are at. I know you and I have discussed it once. I personally feel a lot of the CPG companies, which are the incumbents, are going to suffer because I feel they were the distribution first companies, right? So they were all saying, I have this massive distribution of distributors, wholesalers, retailers. I have reached every corner of this country, basically, right? And that was their game, right? Basically, if you ask me. Now, any new age brand which could sell on Amazon and Flipkart, they were able to build the scale. If you are building a brand which is selling 200 rupee ka, biscuit, maybe 100 rupee ka biscuit or 200 rupee ka, food, let's say, or 60 rupee ka bread ka packet. For them, it was incredibly hard to beat the incumbents because they had no newest distribution channel, right? And they cannot go to the retailer route, it's incredibly hard to build them. At least on ground, I personally feel that quick commerce is going to change that roster in a big way for a lot of CPG companies, because now a startup can build a CPG, FMCG brand. I give an example. There was a protein bread company. We had at Sparrow looked at them, like they were doing 1 crore a month. In 5 months, they scaled to 8-9 crore a month, right? Just on quick commerce, right? That was unimaginable probably when the quick commerce didn't exist. So I feel a lot of slowdown in the incumbent world is also because they always thought they have the distribution and they may not be very aggressive on the product innovation, right? And I feel as the distribution is changing in the power of, let's say, new age platforms like quick commerce, if we are saying Kirana is losing to quick commerce, then people who are relying on Kirana as a distribution suddenly have lost the advantage because they felt that this is my, right to win. But today, a new age startup can build a biscuit brand maybe on quick commerce, that will happen. So I feel it's probably to some extent consumption, but it's also they are probably losing to the new age brands. At least that's how I think about it.
That's a very good point. In fact, I have a slightly different view on this, right? I think that what Amazon Flipkart did for new age brands like us, right, which is discover new brands on an unlimited inventory Amazon or Flipkart, right? So people could try out Mamaearth or Boat or any of these new brands that were coming up. Now, in this particular example, if you are saying like we just spoke about dark store economics being important, right? And if for example, quick commerce sees protein bread to be a 8 crore per month category instead of 1 crore, I think that quick commerce is actually a channel that will take the power back to large companies fundamentally, because there will always be dark store inventory limitations. So if I'm a Zepto or a Instamart, I'm going to be like, okay, fine, I will only keep 6 SKUs of bread, right? Or 10 SKUs. And then it might be an opportunity for a Cremica or a Britannia or a Harvest to say, can I come up with the same protein per slice construct at a better price? Because I'm giving bread to these guys. And, it's only 4 or 5 companies might actually succeed, while in Amazon, Flipkart, 30,000 bread companies could be listed, and the better one with the right price and more money and, consumer love could win. So I have a feeling like quick commerce might be more commoditized on the product discovery, where large established brands will actually win, compared to e-commerce, where discovery of new brands was a thing. So I feel like the dark store limitation might actually swing the pendulum back towards. Yes. But the assumption there, Darshit, you are right. I think assumption there is that a Britannia will have to come in with a high protein bread to win. If they don't, and if they're not agile and they're not able to kind of adapt to newer consumers, because quick commerce is going to throw data back at Britannias and Unilevers and Proctors of the world on a daily basis. If they're not able to capture those trends, then it will be very difficult for them to win. Then new age companies will come in and win. You're right.
I think that's the key point that Darshit mentioned, right? Your product innovation cycles now fundamentally have to be far more shorter than what they were. And I think new age brands were always proud of their NPD teams or new product development teams to come up with concepts. But I think the game is just going to change even for more now in the consumer's point of view, where the consumer will be spoiled for choice because, oh, now we want a protein bread. And now suddenly everybody's reworking their entire math to see, okay, how do we make protein bread at the best pricing and the most differentiation possible? Because in the end, the second protein bread still has to say something which is different than the first protein bread, right? Either more protein or less gluten or the 20 other things that you would want to convince the customer by. But that actually brings me to the one favorite topic of mine, which is whenever we look at valuing these companies, and this is a very common thing, right? Oh, Unilever is trading at 10 times revenue and 50 times EV EBITDA. But I think to your point, Darshit, that's the other corollary, right? That fundamentally a Unilever makes 25% net margins, or all of these behemoths make 15-20% EBITDA margins because the brand was stronger than the retailer who's a Kirana and a distributor who doesn't have that much leverage. But if you fast forward this 15-20 years where all grocery commerce becomes quick commerce and the retailers become stronger, like in the US, a retailer is stronger than the brand, effectively brands have to be on their toes, and I don't think we'll end up making as much profit margins. So, like, I think this was a favorite question asked. I mean, a couple of friends who are fund managers and mutual funds, when the Mama Honasa was IPOing, do you see 20% steady state EBITDA margins? And we also operate in a similar industry in consumer health, right? And I keep wondering, how do you make 20% EBITDA margins with a lot of your business requires, and it is true, right? Digital marketing will get, it is a duopoly with Meta and Alphabet, right? Which is Google and Instagram. You do have an Amazon and a Flipkart and distribution support, but even they have much significantly higher margin structure than a distributor and the retailer of old, right? And fundamentally, all fixed costs that used to exist in terms of, actually modern trade used to still make money over time because there would be a fixed cost initially of listing and promoters, but eventually your throughputs would increase and then you would make higher CM2s. But with digital, and I saw this at Rebel, right, when we moved from QSR to delivery only, most of your fixed costs got replaced by variable costs, and it started becoming a very high variable cost structure business, which is what all consumption will go to, right, if you think about it. Do you see, Darshit, that, and maybe Chirag, it's an interesting point for you also because you serve 500,000 plus D2C brands, right? Fundamentally, to make 10% plus EBITDA, where does the alpha come in? Because then everything else looks to be beta, right?
I'll chime in before Darshit comes in. I think he will have a nuanced view on margins, etc. I would want to say more on innovation. I think got Honasa till here. I think they've been able to launch, 6, 7, 8 brands now, digital first. Most of them have scaled. So, you know, what Revanth was saying, that I think market needs to value product innovation as a DNA a lot more, right? Wherein, you know, you are able to demonstrate and build out these niche categories, which are today niche and will become sizable as market grows. That's one. And what, let's say, if I look at the today's or yesterday's quarter results, what has not worked, which has been traditionally said, you know, that while India shops offline, there is a large market offline. India e-commerce penetration is still like single digits, late single digits. So there is a large market offline. But how do you, you know, as a new brand, go out and sell offline? It has been told many, many times that, you know, it's a risky bet. Although consumer shops there, how do you do that? And I can tell you, I've spoken to many brands. I'll tell you classic that, you know, if you operate, start with D2C, you have a lot of data points in terms of, okay, where your consumer is shopping from. Can you use that to start opening your stores or do an offline strategy basis that? It's very hard. Because the way offline works is that it works from availability point of view. That do you have a store in, let's say, select city? Not that, you know, my audience resides there. Okay, I need a store. Right? And then imagine that in digital, if something does not work, you cut it short and you move on and move on to the next product. At best, what is lost is, let's say, you have a couple of months of inventory. In offline, you have 6, 9, 12, 15, 18 months leases. How do you solve for that? You know, so every new one is an incrementally riskier bet, if you figured out. What at least I have seen is that brands who have done, or there is a lot of demand pool which is already there, which is what typically traditional brands would do, that there is a lot of demand and then you would. And you look at retailer as a model. Retailer would typically want to sell those things which are just flying off the shelf, right? They would not want to educate the consumer on certain things, or that's like 10 to 80% of the thing. 80% of the things they would want that it goes off the shelf. And if I'm looking at it from that point of view, that does Mamaearth have enough pull? Yes. Are they able to, you know, go out and put it in inventory and then it's not flying off? What is the reason? And then what guidance do we give, let's say, brands which are 110 their sales? Right? Is doing offline the right thing to do? And at what point? That, you know, are you seeing like demand generation pull happening? Probably that's the point. And coming back to, I think, innovation, there is, at least I have realized that we are living in a world where digital media rules, attention spans are going lower. And, you know, you have to always be on this, always be launching mode, right? So whether it is product, whether it is doing social media content, et cetera, et cetera. And that is where you disrupt the incumbents. But I'll let Darshit comment on the numbers.
Before we go to Darshit, I think one personal point of view here, I think for us at Bombay Shaving Company, we know that a large part of our category sits offline. People will go buy a razor and a shaving foam and a shaving cream, still in Kirana stores, replenish their bathrooms in a modern trade visit, right? That's the shopper behavior. So for us, we always thought that going offline was something, and Chirag, when we were also together, you know, the company was maybe much lesser, 1/10 this current scale. But apne ko yeh lagta tha ki yaar, apne ko offline jana zaruri hai, because at some point the online markets will kind of saturate. If we get to 15-18% market share in our hero product categories, we'll saturate. We're now realizing that getting to maybe a 600-700 crore top line will not require as much offline dependence as we had thought before. Because a customer in Bulandshahr, or a customer in Latur, or a customer in Vizag will now be serviced by one of, at least one of Zepto, Instamart, or Blinkit. Because these guys are going and setting up their dark stores very strategically everywhere where there is modern trade penetration of some kind. So now we don't need to invest in the offline, you know, whether it's promoters or, as Revanth calls it, the variable cost of getting into to like large scale consumption of India 2 or 3, wo karne ki jarurat nahi hai 600-700 crore tak, because of the quick commerce wave. So I think for a lot of brands like us, we are very happy that top 100 cities, maybe 25-30% of weighted distribution of India in our categories. And that's it, right? It might be category to category, but at least in our category, 25-30% weighted distribution, humko online hi mil jayega. To phir maybe offline can be a decision that can be delayed for maybe more than what one had imagined before. Second is, to Revan's point on, you know, 10% EBITDA, like, you just look at the Varun Beverages versus PepsiCo kind of like difference in leverage of these two companies, right? I do think that there is a movement from brand to distributor / manufacturer. Wo ho raha hai in terms of just value capture that might happen. And I think a third thing, which I don't thing is affecting a lot of us, but I think will become real, is that there is going to be protectionist policy that's going to come across the world. Like with Trump getting elected, American manufacturing and more, you know, more trade tariffs, etc. Even with us, for example, I think we are seeing it happening in electronics already, right? With boat noise, etc. Importing from outside is going to become difficult. And the government is going to kind of really push companies to manufacture within our borders. And I feel like the more that happens, then the more the value capture will go towards manufacturing slash distribution versus brand building, because utna profit pools create karna bahut difficult ho jayega. So these are my two reflections, I think, Chirag, on your point. But Darshit, over to you.
Shantanu, just adding, you know, you were saying that you are of the view now that online probably has more depth, or some channel will serve them, right? Hence, the yes. decision to do offline probably gets shifted.
Yes, right? For us, for specifically.
Yeah, and I'm saying, I'll give you another data point. I think from a size point of view, that average, let's say a D2C brand before 2015 used to take 8.5 years to get to 100 crores. By 2020, that came down to 5.5 years. And post-2020 onwards companies, we are seeing that in 2.5 years, people are getting to 200 crores.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, you can imagine in first 2.5 years, nobody goes offline.
Yeah.
Right. So it's mostly e-commerce channels, quick commerce, D2C. So probably then what, you know, at least is coming out is that to get to 100 crores number, you don't need to do anything outside of, let's say, e-commerce channels.
Yeah. Main to 500 crore bol raha hu. Like 500 crore tak tum e-commerce, quick commerce or D2C ke through, you can kind of scale it till 500 crores. Darshit, sorry, we kept interrupting you.
No. Absolutely. No, I think it's great. I think I agree that there are two different questions, right? One is scale, right? Can the brand scale without offline? It seems like the answer is actually, at least that is a moving target. It used to be 100 crore, maybe it's now 500 crore, and maybe it will be 1,000 crore in a few years from now, right? So I think in my mind, the margin is really a function of the moat, right? So what's the moat as a business, right? And I will... Like Google is a 30% EBITDA margin business, and Apple is a 35%, and maybe Facebook is 25-30%. It's because of the moat that they've created. So let me ask this question to all three of you, right? As a new age, somebody who is closely involved in new age brand, right? If you think about HUL, in India, at least their moat was their distribution, basically, right? Saying was, I have the distribution and I have the power of distribution. Like, what is the long-term moat of any brand business that somebody is building? Would love to hear from you guys. And that really answers the long-term margin in my head, actually, how the margin gets created. Yeah.
For me, of course, you know, brand building is one. But two is definitely, which at least the market does not seem to be valuing today, is product innovation. That how fast can you launch products? And to that extent, that is it your DNA? Like it used to be said that is brand your DNA? Brand is a little bit of an art more than science. I think I would go to that extent that is product innovation your DNA? Are you thinking launching or always been launching more like what Andrew Chen said? I would probably give that a lot more, you know, at least numbers.
For me, I think also I agree with Chirag. I think brand always will, even for Unilever, I think the power of some of their brands is phenomenal. I think distribution is also built fundamentally because the brand pull amongst the distribution, retail or distributors is so high. Whether it's Brookbond or Surf Excel or, you know, some of these brands is just phenomenal, and they're able to kind of synergize it through a very, very efficient sales force. And I think to add to what Siraj is saying, I do feel like a lot of the brand building that has happened for consumers that are now in their 30s and 40s. Okay, if you look at the brand I mentioned, you look at, you know, Surf Excel, Brookbond, you look at Dabur from Vatika to Chyawanprash, you look at Gillette, you look at Forever. Any of these brands are 35, 40-year-old consumers. They've been building it for 15, 20 years. They caught the consumer at 18, 20, 22 and kind of built it out. But I think a big part of like new age brand is, how much appeal do you have for the 18-year-old today, 18 or 20-year-old? So when that consumer becomes 23, 24, 25, starts earning money, gets into the workforce, but then can you capture? I think Mokobara is a classic example of just a young brand, which is appealing to the young traveler. You know, I think I heard Mohit Bhatnagar say 1 million passports being issued per year. Where are they going to go and get their first luggage bag? If you're 22, 23, are you going to go buy a VIP or are you going to go buy a Mukubara? And that's the real. So I think brands that can really capture brand pull for the 21-year-old of today will be where I think investors can underwrite future growth a lot more. Something that we try to do a lot more of as well. It'll kind of stay relevant to younger consumers. And that's where, again, like Raven said, like social media, content distribution games are very different, right? For younger brands. And, you know, people are now appealing to founder brands or to, you know, Zomato is a classic example of how, you know, corporate brands are built in a very beautiful, non-traditional way. So I think that's the third mode, I think, which will kind of be built up. Ki how youthful is your offer?
I think both are great points, but I think one of the aspects that I really think is longevity, right? What can you actually build over a 15-20-year period? Because the funny thing is, Shantanu, I think people forget that at every stage, you may require to solve for a specific investor, right? Like when you are seed stage investor, series A, series B. Today, even if you have to list, you need to have a story. You know, it's a damn funny. I used to think that, you know, badiya number hai. If you have great revenue, great EBITDA, then, you know, mutual fund guys will say, great. Oh, they also want to hear a story. What are you going to build over the next 10 years? How will margin accrue, et cetera, et cetera?
Right? So, podcast
I think the interesting... I keep thinking, what is a moat that can sustain over a period of time, right? So just between the two options that you guys said, right?
Yes.
One is always be launching and have a product innovation DNA or have a creative / brand DNA. I think both are good to have, and I see brands trying to build for both. Unsure, I think the product innovation DNA can sustain. Is it a person? Is it a team? Is it a culture? It's very interesting to see how that evolves. Same for brand, right? But fundamentally, the power of distribution is undeniable because the power of distribution stays with you. I'll just repeat what Darshit said, right? That if the 30 million base, he's saying will go to 150 million, even if it doesn't go to 150 million, goes to 70 million. But those 70 million frequency of ordering will go up. Swiggy's next 15 years growth is underwritten in that sense. Yeah, their market share may go from 42% to 30% in food delivery, but fundamentally, people are going to increase their food ordering and not reduce it. And more people will come into the food ordering base versus not, right? And because the power of distribution exists, your ability to sustain that business model over the next 10-15 years remains. The problem I see with brand, if you ask me, it's not a problem, sorry, maybe that's a very harsh word to use, is I see consumer choices change very fast nowadays, right? I don't think it's just a 35-year-old and a 21-year-old. What Mukubara has done is absolutely great. And I'm pretty proud as an investor to see how beautifully they are building. I think 22-year-olds may just get excited by, like, there are sneaker drops, there may be luggage drops. I don't know what happens. Like, the culture is changing so fast every 5 years. And the internet is forcing that culture shift, right? For 10 years, I think there were... people were quite on the left in the US. And you mentioned the Trump results. So I'm saying suddenly now there's a right-wing wave, right? And it's all the power of social media of where people can push through. TikTok was banned in India, so we have not seen. But there's a phenomenal revolution happening on how content consumption as well as shopping is done on TikTok, for example, in global markets. So one thing that's going to change with every consumer coming digital, and today 850 million people have internet, 650 million people have access to Instagram, 450 million people are shopping, and that number will only grow. Their behavior changes are far more frequent than what it was in the previous generation, right? So can a brand actually be the same for over 10 years? And you need that time, right? You can't... See, India is still a smallish TAM market where for you to build a 2,000 crore brand, you need that 15 years or so of continuous product love and brand love happening. But if your consumer base is going to shift very quickly to something new and eye-catchy, and attention spans are reducing in that sense, right? Even if you have a strong brand, you are deluded with 20 other brands that are coming in every single day. And it's not that it's static, right? There are a lot of creative people who will want to appeal to you in different ways as well. So how sustainable that is, it's a big question for me today. The same happens with product innovation. And I feel, therefore, if a brand can actually build a distribution mode, there is nothing more powerful than that. How that gets built, I don't know. Is it easy? Absolutely not. Does it require a lot of capital? Absolutely yes. But I think it's well worth building distribution as a mode, if you ask me. And very few people have been able to do it, right? I think Country Delight is actually a brand. I know they think of it as a retailer, but actually it was a dairy brand. Now it's a grocery brand as such. Because they only do their own products. That's why I call them a brand more than a retailer. They don't do other products, right? Everything is Country Delight branded. So it's a brand. But everything is on their own distribution. Far more powerful moat, if you ask me, compared to brand as a moat or product innovation as a moat. And see, it's not that brands who build with branding as a moat will not be successful. But the definition of success is what... I don't know if Darshan's question was definition of success or is it outlier outcomes or what is that investable or not. But I think founders can choose where to build. It's just that the size of the price will be different in all three.
So I had one question for you guys, right? So in fact, recently somebody mentioned to me that Louis Vuitton, one store in Delhi does 300 crore top line in a year, basically, right? That's something which just blew my mind, saying when the whole world is moving online, there's one store in Delhi who is doing. So if you had to give it a best shot to build a brand with, let's say, 30% EBITDA, right, in this country, do you guys feel that you're better off being a luxury brand or a mass premium brand? Like, is there a margin is more about what part of the pyramid you are capturing and hence your pricing power and the value of the brand? Like today, probably the beyond 30 million people don't value the brand. They are more price conscious and hence maybe the margin, creating that kind of margin is much harder. But if you're a luxury brand or even a slightly more premium brand, maybe you have an opportunity to capture the margin. Do you guys feel that, is there a segment of India where you still have an ability to build a brand and capture those 25-30% EBITDA?
Difficult lagta hai ko. Because we see a Louis Vuitton or we'll see a Rolex or we'll see some of these brands, and I don't think we realize the decades of, you know, kind of signaling that they have done to make them premium. It's not just the quality of the product or, you know, the fanciness of a Louis Vuitton store in an Emporium mall. I think it is just insane amounts of, you know, investing in movies and culture and celebrity and, you know, putting that in to build the imagery of the brand to that extent. So for me, whenever someone says, and I've gone down this route of trying to build a premium brand, but to get scale, we kind of said, "Kiar boss, you have to align to the price of the category, right?" But then the category choice becomes very important. Like Mukhabara, for example, is a good example where they chose the category of luggage. It's clear signaling. There is innovation opportunity, like Chirag is saying, right? Like in China, you see people sitting on their scooter, on their bags and driving them like scooters across airports. So there is a way for, you know, the design elements to continue innovating. And if Mukhabara does that well, they will take away share from Safari or VIP or, you know, Samsonite or whatever. But, and you can then charge 10,000 rupees for a bag compared to, let's say, 5,000 rupees. But it has to be very carefully thought through. I don't think you can do it, for example, in cookies or, you know, food and beverages. It requires Red Bull to take that kind of premium and build a 3,000 crore brand in India. Red Bull banna chahiye. You can't, like, I don't think entrepreneurs who are starting 0 to 1 can think about that that easily.
I actually think it's a good point, Darshit. I think it's very much possible. And I take Shantanu's nuance on the categories to choose in, because this is a value play, this is not a volume play, right? If you get volume, then you build a massively large business. But even if you don't get volume, I think premium / luxury, actually, which is even above premium, is a great place to build. Just don't be venture-backed. That's my simple nuance. No, you have to, because it's a compounding growth. See, you answered the question, no, Shantanu. You would have loved to build a very premium brand, but once there is that pressure of growing month-on-month, quarter-on-quarter, you're not... Premium and luxury can't be built at pace. You have to just solve for customer love, signaling... लोग टशन में तुम्हारा चीज पहनेंगे दिखाएंगे धीरे 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 इट विल पिक अप राइट एंड वंस इट पिक्स अप इट गेट्स टू अ स्टेज वेयर इट विल जस्ट बी अ कॉन्स्टेंट कंपाउंडर एंड वी टेक योर पॉइंट राइट दर्शित लाइक इफ यू टेक द लग्जरी बेस इट विल बी 5 मिलियन कस्टमर्स इन इंडिया राइट इंडिया वन का भी, लेट्स टेक इंडिया वन प्लस प्लस, राइट, 5 मिलियन कंज्यूमर्स और लेस देन दैट 2 मिलियन कंज्यूमर्स, दैट 2 मिलियन विल ऑल्सो गो टू 5 मिलियन और 6 मिलियन और 10 मिलियन फॉर दैट मैटर, राइट. सो इफ यू कैन कंपाउंड फॉर 10-15 years, आई थिंक लग्जरी इज अ ग्रेट प्लेस टू स्टार्ट. आई जस्ट थिंक इट्स नॉट फॉर वेंचर बैक कंपनीज और आई डोंट थिंक दे शुड गो एंड देन टेक वेंचर कैपिटल बिकॉज it's going to grow in a proper compounding beautiful 25-30% way, and the first 4 years will be the slowest because that pool is very 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 small today, but it is accelerating the fastest.
But yeah, I think we have been recording for 1 hour 45 minutes. I think the Swiggy IPO discussion, I have very like lot of deep insights for me to also kind of chew over, think about, take back to my team. But this has been a very, very fascinating discussion. Anyway, I think we should kind of bring our pilot to a close. I think this is gold. So much. I've just been taking notes also through and through. I think, Chirag, I would love to get like a peek into all of the stuff that you keep doing. I whenever Chirag says that I'm doing research, I want to kind of double click on what Chirag's screen looks like. Always something interesting there. But thank you so much for spending time. And I hope all the viewers of the pilot episode of Asymmetric have enjoyed it.
No, any closing thoughts, Revant? Was good fun chatting with you. And Chirag, I would love to get the charts that you showed. I'm sure there's a lot more for us to research and learn from those as well.